Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris has said she is proud to have secured the broad support needed to become the Democratic Party's nominee for president. She was speaking after surveys found she'd won pledges from enough party delegates just over a day after Joe Biden said he was dropping out of the race. She's expected to be officially confirmed in a roll call vote in early August. John Scardino from Democrats Abroad says Kamala Harris has a lot of suitable experience from before she became Vice President.
Her qualifications and her record and her experience are more than most vice presidents and more than even some presidents who have come into the position. She's comes with the kind of experience that is going to be crucial for the job.
Talks are beginning today between the government and the BMA union in a bid to end the long-running pay dispute by junior doctors in England. There have been 11 strikes since the spring of last year, with hundreds of thousands of operations and appointments being cancelled. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Stephen Davis.
When you need a number fast, the only number you need is 118212.
Miss Maureen, the telephone detective, at your service.
Maureen! 118212.
Calls cost £2.50 per call, plus 75p a minute with a minimum 1 minute charge, plus your phone company's access charge.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Imagine, it's Wednesday. 1 minute you're at the gym, you're doing it, getting those steps in, not thinking about pizza, and definitely not clock watching. Only 56 and a half more minutes left. And the next, that'll do. You're a millionaire. Lotto, will you be next? Play on app, the National Lottery. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Colorful Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on your time zone, where you are connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. And today we are so lucky. We are going to a place where sunshine is always guaranteed. And that is, we are connecting from London to Ghana. And today we are speaking to Rudy Kwache, who is right now in Ghana. As we are in London, you can imagine how I feel when I see the bright background he has. And I compare that with my dark background, which is very cloud and heavy laden. It looks like the sky has been upset, but it's okay. It's okay. We need balance. But I envy being in Africa, you know. which part of Ghana are you in?
I'm in Accra.
Accra. Wow. Right. Oh, that's good. That's good. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah. So, Rudy Kwache, we will be hosting you. And of course, to our listeners, this is coming to you wherever you are from the heart of London on Colorful Radio. So keep it colorful and welcome. Rudy, welcome to the show. And, I want to do what I don't like doing. I like people talking about themselves because they are next to me. Why should I talk about them? So I want you to introduce yourself to our listeners and what you're doing. Of course, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Julius. And I'm so happy to be here. So my name is Rudy Kwache. I'm a Ghanaian. When somebody asked me, what do you do? I said, I build experiences. And we're experiences, our live entertainment experiences, from festivals, concerts, tours, to parties. That's where my life is. But taking that at that product side, in the ecosystem I'm in, the creative cultural sector. I believe culture is the one strength that we have on the continent that we can use to scale a lot of our problems. Why? Because we've got thousands of years of history, in fact 100,000 years more of undiscovered parts of our continent. We've got a young population. We're 1.2 billion in strong, and we've got everything that the world needs, which includes our bodies itself. So that's a massive strength. And I think that also that culture is one part where we've probably been super strong and unbroken for 10,000 years. You know, where the Aztec empires, where the Mayan empires, where the Incas, well, the Egyptian empire is still there. Ethiopia is still on the map. You know, all the old cultures that gave birth to a lot of the things we see on the global culture stage are still here. They're still part of us. You know, whereas in other markets or in other places, there's always a disconnect. You know, you don't come to Africa to explore ruins. You actually come to meet the people that have been living the same way for thousands of years. So that's our strength, and that's what I believe in.
I quite like that, Rudy. You see, Africa is not just talk about minerals, is rich in everything. We are talking about a continent of 1.3 billion people. And when we talk about the richness in terms of culture, then think about a continent where over 2,000 languages are spoken. Think about each language belonging to a particular tribe. Think about that tribe having, some of them having as many people as 5 million, 4 million. Think about those languages being as different as French from English or Italiano. When you think about that richness of languages and amazing cultural, subcultural practices, I mean, where do you see that going? Like right now, according to demographics and population studies, they're saying that almost 70% of Africa are youthful people.
Yes.
Where do you see the culture of youth going?
For me, what I see is the world's next great consumer market in almost everything. We've got growth on our side. We've got a younger population, which is still getting younger and younger. It's just still super strong with all these challenges. The most resilient population. It is, the future is ours. And where we're going is we're going to become that block. And it's already showing on paper. If you look at how all global players are running and not asking or acting how they used to act 10, 20 years ago, which is, oh, Africa is jungle. We can't figure it out. Some of them are toughening it out and actually starting things on the continent just in the hopes of actually understanding and tapping into that great leap that is coming. For me, it's the nirvana for business. It's because what is the great conversation in the West? Our population is aging. We are getting older. Things are changing. Ours is the reverse. The population is aging and growing at the same time. So it's a massive economic power that we hold. And where it's going, it becomes that strong block if we organize it rightly in a very consistent economic framework that allows us to actually tap into the power that we have and, you know, generate things for ourselves. It's no more someone coming, taking the precious resource, going to refining and throwing it back. It is you coming to meet us and we finished all the products and we're trading equally. I think that's where I see our youth going. It's a massive block. It's got perfect pound signs. Let me not use dollar. Perfect pound signs on every person's forehead. And we're living longer also. That's the other part that sometimes the research doesn't tell you. We hear about all the deaths, or, you know, we throw things. Malaria kills this amount of people. Well, check. We're also living very long. Like very, very long. People are living longer than usual, in spite of all the challenges that we have. So that shows that economically we're forced to be reckoned with. We need to be organized into a certain framework that we can extract that value.
We think about the youth, think about leadership. And you see, if I want to quote words of J.F. Kennedy, former president of the U.S., don't ask what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Now, we have seen emergency of youths embracing creatives who have become vloggers, who have become bloggers, who have become YouTubers and TikTokers on social media, some of them owning channels and monetizing them. and this is kind of self-driven form of initiative. You yourself, you're an entrepreneur, and you know the self-drive, the meaning of self-drive, how important it is. It is. So when you compare these journeys, we see these youths making, your journey as well. What is there for us to learn?
I think one of the things that biggest things that we need to learn is to understand what global commerce is. You know, one of the great disservice that was done to one or two generations in Africa was to get us into a charity state where we think that everything needs to be handed down, where the savior was seen from coming, was seen like he comes from the outside, not from the inside. The savior is here. So that mindset actually permeated where, and you see it with our leaders not asking themselves, how is it that Ghana has continuously mined gold and as the world's number one or two gold supplier for the last 100 years consistent, and it shows no slowing down, whereas in spaces like in other spaces like 50 years and the resource is gone. Our leaders haven't used that capacity to actually build something for the future. We don't plan also. That's a big, big thing. Like, we do not plan 50, 100 years. We do not plan decades. It's very short term. It's also, that stems from what I see is that charity mentality of somebody came to... I mean, Julius, if I flew to London and open a pub or open the school or any other thing in any community, how many claps would I get? Nothing. I'm not sure I'll even get the head of the council to meet me and say, you've done something. But what? Somebody comes in here and plants a borehole and wants to meet the president, and the president makes time for them? I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying it's almost like we put ourselves in a place where the barrier of entry is so low for everything, whereas we should be commanding very high barrier, you know, entry. And you don't see that even much more pronounced than the culture space. Like, did Taylor Swift meet the PM in his office because Taylor Swift came to London to perform? So how the heck does a London artist want to enter Ghana and wants to see the president, and the president will make time to come and sit down and talk to them? I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying, like, all the things that we have to do, like, is that what we are here for? And those are the things that we need to take cognizance of. So just to jump back to, and I digress a little bit, just to jump back to your question in what we can learn, we need to learn planning. We need to first understand our power and the resources that we have. We need to understand our people. We need to understand our population dynamics and demographics. We need to understand all of these economic indicators, and we need to put it on a spreadsheet and say, this is what we can do to unlock this one. And yes, we have to share the generation or two, because there's always this mentality of the West, you know, has the answers, and we don't. We have all the answers, to be honest. We do have the answers here. We're just lazy about implementing them.
So probably the interaction between people like you, the younger generation, mentorship happening, then we have hope. And, you know, if I get what you're saying, yes, planning, that comes through training, mentorship. And, you know, when you show younger generation direction, of course, then this leadership happening there. But my question is, in terms of the rich cultures that we have, if you scan across Ghana, how many tribes are there? Each tribe is like a storehouse for cultural productions. You can talk about producing programs on TV, about the same YouTube channels filled up with all this content. Is it happening with the creatives? Are they making references to these cultures? You know, are they making use of what we have? Has that become like a storehouse for modern day creatives, or are they just looking west?
This is Colorful Radio.
Well, I mean, the forgetting home part started not today, and that's actually I guess it makes it taps back into my previous point, which was, you know, there's a dependency that has been built from previous generations, like the ancestors lie in the West. But what we are is actually rediscovery of the rich tapestry that we have. So the tribes, and this is, again, I mean, this was actually even part of my opening thing, what I said, that we've been living this way continuously for thousands of years. So when you see it, it's not an extinct piece. We've been making kente for 500 years, and it's the same process that it goes. We're now taking those things and plugging them into a global supply chain framework to scale these things. So if I look at the tribes, if I look at the cultures, if I look at the people, if I look at the various touch points that we have, what I see is a rich gateway that is monetizable, that can be packaged, and that can be sold. There are about, what, hundreds of festivals at the community level. Every tribe almost has a festival. Each festival has its own unique variation from the other. And that is a weird thing. So in Accra, the indigenous people of Accra are called the Ga people. Now, the Ga people are spread all over. And they've every space, every sub-tribe within the Ga pantheon actually have its own Homowo, which is the local festival. It's preceded by a month of, you know, ban on drumming and dancing and any loud noises whilst rituals are taking place. But they're about a square mile of, say, it would take me probably like 30 minutes to drive across all of that. But there's probably five festivals within that place. So everyone has, and there's a variation of it. And it happens in a timeous manner. So, I mean, think about it from my perspective. That's raw material for me to package, which means I can have five homo packages for the, you know, for the international market from an experiential perspective at various times of the year. So it's not a one size fit all. And if you go to all the other tribes, there's multiple Akwesidais, there's multiple yam festivals, there's multiple. So those are the core points, the core ingredients. Raw material that we have that we can lift and package, because the world has not been more curious about Africa than this time. And it's for a couple of reasons. One of them is obviously a dissemination of proper raw information. We're plugged into the global system, so we are countering narratives like they live on trees. Like, you don't get that idiotic, and I say that with all love for my American brothers, where they eat, hey, where are you from? I'm from Ghana. Oh, yeah, I have a friend in Kenya. Do you know him? I'm like, do you know the distance between Ghana and Kenya? Like, the probability that I do know is so low. But the thing is there's a spatial confusion, because the entire continent of 50-something countries is being called Africa, and we think is one. Whereas we would rightly describe continental USA, but with X number of states. So because of that breakdown of that information, how we are rearranging that narrative, there's a clear understanding. There's no confusion that I come from Ghana. You're not confusing me with Julius, who's from another part. You're taking cognizance of our accents and peculiarities and attributes, and you're putting us in the right box. So that has increased the curiosity on the continent. Whereas it used to be, there's nobody talking, there's nobody sharing, there's nobody engaging. So, you know, the few liars who come in and say what they want to say is what stands. I admit, we still have a massive amount of work to do. But, you know, institutions like yours, like Colorful Radio's decades old presence, and then some of the content that, you know, I've been tracking and following that you do, has actually pierced that veil, and there's a curiosity about it. Now, that's like in business, that's availability of market. Like, that's an interest. How do we take that interest and convert it into a buy? Typically, that's what Ghana has done with, okay, picking a point in time and doing our year of return and turning it into this whole global phenomenon. And we've spurred on other countries to actually start to curate. So what you're seeing is on the calendar, across Africa, there's an appearance of high points that for everyone that is coming. So just like, you know, the 4th of July weekend in America, you're getting something else in another country. So it's all not traditional, let's go back home December because that's my only time I take my holidays. It's going beyond that. There's a rediscovery of the continent because there's an interest in, and there's a heightened curiosity about what it is about and why you're seeing this on this global stage. And I guess that's the opportunity that we have with that rich tapestry. I say it's a canvas that, and the thing is, every African cloth or traditional cloth from Ethiopia, right, from Cape to Cairo, is actually a complex tapestry. Like, you find one color in there. I guess that's an attribute across the continent, and that's our opportunity right there for us to weave and bring people in at that level.
Rudy, you've of course worked in serious position. You've been an innovations manager for leading conglomerate like Moot Media Group Limited, the parent company of Joy FM in Ghana.
Yes.
And you've also been yourself, your media personality, writer, you know, and you've also worked for the giant of entertainment. We're talking about MTV base. So what special experiences that you encountered while there, and especially when you were dealing with the youths? You know, when we talk about creatives, you come across a group of youths who are focused on, yeah, let's keep it real, let's focus on who we are. And then you find another brand of youths who are like, he's only great if he's Hollywood or American.
Yeah, that's a very good one. I guess let's look at it this way. For me, it was a great learning experience seeing the world through global lenses like that of like an MTV base. So without even sounding, and I must be careful here, MTV came to the continent. One of the things that the great leader of our time, Alex Okosi, did was, and that's one of the smartest things, let me talk, that MTV itself did, was find a native son who understood what the processes of the West is, but is so plugged in back home that he will build the right bridges on that level. So the explosion of content and people and talents that we saw today is work that we did a decade and a half prior. And one of the things was, you enter Africa without your preconceptions. And that was one of the great things like an MTV did, was we are not going to say that what we did with rock in America is what needs to know. We're going to come in and understand. We used to have a certain process, like every year, every country would actually submit a list and says, these are the talents to watch. And we talent managers will write a whole thesis in explaining why you think from your market, this is a talent to watch. So what are they? This is pre-streaming. So, hey, they've got this hot single, they're a radio star. When you say a radio star, which means the song is getting circulation, it may not have a video for it to bump to TV, but they're a radio star, they're already doing clubs, they're doing this, this song is that, they've got a collaboration that works. And also the thinking of, it's 52 countries, but let's try and collapse it into one. So who are doing collaborations in Ghana and Kenya? What are the songs that are charting in this place? These songs need to be elevated, because what they've done is they've connected, the connective tissues have found the notes, proper notes in other markets. And when you took that and you elevated that, you started, because it was a very hard thing to we are very notorious, all of us, in seeing things through our country lenses, our tribal lenses, which is a good thing, it's not a bad thing. But how do you collapse the continent into one flat space? By looking for the commonalities. And this is where the West gets lazy. You can't classify Liberia, Sierra Leone, as you classify Ghana. You can't even classify Togo and Ghana when we share a border. Their peculiarities are, but also the similarities are actually glaring. Because the dance styles in Lomé are actually seeped into dance styles in Accra. So what is that connective tissue? And I guess I learned to pick things from that or elements and say, these are the ones that we elevate that speaks to all. These are the ones that we pick that speaks to all. And it's been, the process has been repeated again and again and again without it being filtered through, say, what I call like Western lenses. Now it's in its pure form. And I guess that's why we are seeing an explosion of these things. You know, there's an African festival everywhere. And these days, when we talk about an African, it's not a traditional festival where people come in to drum and do traditional dances. And, you know, it's, which is like a fair for Westerners and white people to like, this is Africa. No, you're seeing contemporary hip hop dressed like we're in global culture. We're taking an extreme. We've got ornaments and symbols and things that we are integrating into all our things that you have no clue of, and change and shifting the game. But these things have always been available. Always been available to us. So we learned from that process to create those fusions. We learned from that process to, you know, to find, we don't have a single language on the continent, but I think a single language on the continent is actually culture, because that everybody understands. Look, I learned about the Bagandas in Uganda, and I look at the Zulus in South Africa, and I look at the Ashantis in Ghana. It's actually the same system. This is the dominant tribe. They are heavily in commerce. They are heavily in trade. And the rarities that they afford their kingships and the pantheons that they've built around is actually the same. And that's why I said culture speaks the same language. And you find that in every single African country that you go, there's always a monarch, which is not, it doesn't cover the entire country. But in elevation, you see that, wait, this is a leading monarch. This is how they play. They're super fiercely traditional. They're fiercely maintaining. They are woven into the political tapestry of things. And they've kept this thing going for it, all the iterations that we've seen. And for me, that's the big revelation. And, you know, working through systems and using, you know, Western formats to be able to drive innovations, I learned something. We already have systems and formats. We just needed to put them in the right language. We needed to be able to put form to the ideas.
This is Colorful Radio.
I think also music is part of cultural practices, and you are right. It cuts across Africa. I can't tell you how many songs which were from different countries, and I found myself able to sing the words like your Ghanaian Mike Keke and Show Me Lojo Oluo Olumo. And I probably will sing that song. But if you were to stop me, hang on, Julius, what do the words mean? I say, it's a spirit that's in the song that drives
that's
me.
It. That is it.
I don't know the words, but I have that blind trust. The way it sounds is good.
And it is good. Like, there was a few years ago when I was still on radio, there was this song. It was a compilation put together by Motorola, and there was a song on it, No Sweating, No Sweetie. And I think the artist came from Zimbabwe. I tried to bring this talent to Ghana because that song was a massive hit, and we didn't understand nothing. But everybody was bumping to that track.
And there's that amazing trust of the words. It's not yes. more about, it's like the spirit within the song, you know. You find me singing, and you, if someone didn't tell you, you think I'm Ghanaian. Yeah. Show me Lojo Jumolua, and you keep going. Michael Keke, that's in Ghana, doctor. And it's just amazing. And the same thing you're saying is true, because there is a lot of unity between cultures. I find, even if you go deeper back in the history of African cultures, and even before colonialism, there are those moments of commonalities, and agreements and similar structures. Because if, for example, you came to Kenya, different tribes had different kind of governance structures. For example, the Maasai in Kenya, they had the Maasai Council of Elders, who are like a court. They will prosecute cases even for murder. And when you go to different other tribes, like in Kenya, there's another tribe, one of the biggest tribe, Kikuyu. There are those days it used to be led by a lady, but in their traditional methods, the men tried to overthrow the lady and they came on power again. So, so it's amazing when you go across Africa, all different 54 countries, you realize there are those moments of commonality. Some things are similar, almost similar. Others slightly different, but they bring people together, you know, they bring people together, and it's amazing.
I think there's more that unites us than divides us, and it's just a bit of a brainwashing saying that we're actually different. We are not. There's more that we have in common. And the other thing is, you know, suppressed history. If we even track migration history, you'd actually everybody's related to everybody on this continent, because that's how, if you chart our migration patterns, it's always been. So it's just we have more in common than what we would call differences. It's just straight up.
Yeah, quite agree. But now a point about youth and leadership and the idea of taking initiative. And of course, I don't know whether you've been observing what's going on in Kenya. The youths of Kenya, branding themselves as Gen Z, have managed to think about leadership and saw it in their own way. And they found a method that is to overcome their political challenges. Right. Isn't they are not the first ones to protest. Of course, after every election, there's always protest in Kenya, but fronted by the opposition leaders who have remained to be the same characters. And after election, they've always gotten compromised in one way or the other. They stuck to the status quo. They shook hands with their enemies. And what actually was the result? Nothing ever changed. You could easily be excused to say they share the same bed, the opposition and the ruling elites. So now that has been the script. Now the Gen Z came up with a formula, all right? Partyless, leaderless, fearless. And they have blocked all politicians, even the ones in the opposition. They told them, you've done your time, it's our time, don't interfere. And as I speak, we have seen great results. Yes, the finance bill, controversial, which was meant for them to be overtaxed, almost half their salary is gone. It's no longer there. They set up a parliament on fire, and the MPs who had voted for that bill, they had to run for their lives. Now, away from that, we have seen the same Gen Z and pressure telling the government the things they have to change. Cabinet, whole ministers, all of them sent home. And that's not over yet. The Inspector General who was commanding the police, who shot them, killed some of them, is no longer the Inspector General. He resigned. So they are delivering. As I'm talking to you, they are still on the streets. It's not over. They take one agenda at a time. They see victory. They go to the next agenda. Now, when you look into that, I've seen a lot of comments on TikTok, on X space, from West African countries, Ghana also, talking about how inspired the youths were by this kind of approach. I don't know whether you saw that or not. And I'm asking that because I'm thinking, is the time for the youths to take matters on their hand, as in terms of leadership, take leadership, because maybe they don't have a lot of role models, they don't have a lot of mentors. They have to take leadership the way they understand it and swim from the deep end, if that may be the case.
I think we were very, very, very much glued to whatever media that we had here, because we're watching, we've been watching Kenya with keen eyes, because I mean, it wasn't long ago, a few years ago, with when our neighbors in Nigeria went on protest, and there were lives lost, people were shot. So we're watching also how East Africa was going to pan out, and we saw the people power. And I guess this is all part of the reawakening across the continent at a certain point. The last time we probably experienced that is that period in the 1950s through to 60s, where there was a slew of action that, you know, saw almost the continent liberated, in quotes, from all colonial masters, because we decided to put things right. But I guess my keen observation and worry is what next? The people power and the resource that it's getting is great, and that it's also a good time to remind the leadership that we put them there, and therefore we can decide to actually let you go. And this is exactly what is. And I'm also kind of bravely looking at the president, like, you know, people get intransigent. In other spaces, they would double down and become tyrants overnight. The fact that he had to take a pause and literally let your entire government go, you know, change your security apparatus and systematically disassemble that power structure that has existed, it's a commendable and bold step. But I also like the fact that the young people are saying that's not enough. Like, this is a righteous fire that is sweeping through a certain space, making sure that we can recess things to be right, and also send a message. And you know, it's funny, in West Africa, the conversation is, hey, Nigerian youth, are you watching? Hey, Ghanaian youth, are you watching? Every country's young people are actually like, Kenyans have shown you the way how to get it done. It would take a bit of a struggle, but it would end up the way that it would end up if we all bind together to push this, and, you know, and stand on our ground when these conversations come. So I think it's when you have a younger population, what do you expect? That's actually one of the results of having a younger population. There's a lot of energy to go around. And that's also a wake-up call to governments why they need to be on their feet to think multiple years apart, because you also don't want this younger generation to find an avenue for that energy. You want to be channeling them into a space where they can be rightfully utilized for building the continent. You don't want this energy to be channeled to come after you. And I guess that was, for me, that was an underlining message in what was happening in Kenya. We did watch it. Trust me, every single African young person was watching that. And if no country should think that it escaped anywhere. I was in all the platforms just watching and observing what the conversations are and how it breaks into clusters and everything. And everybody was watching that as it unfolds. And probably, I think if Google were to release its search rankings for the last 60 days on Africa, if Kenya is not number one, then something is happening, because I'm sure the search that has gone into just understanding the Kenyan issues is massive. And I guess it also comes down to this pluralism that we've all, media pluralism that we've plugged into. Hitherto, in the 60s, to undertake a coup, capture the radio, the government radio station and TV, and that's it. You have a coup. Announce that, like, yo, how are you gonna do that? I remember a joke by the great, you know, Kamla Dumont, the late Kamla Dumont, a few years ago when he was on radio in Ghana. He says, these days, if you want to do a coup, you a cool maker need to actually buy sponsorship so we can read the LPM and say, this coup is brought to you by this coup is brought to you by, and he put a Ghanaian brand there, he who feels it knows it. Because where are you going to? There's 60 radio stations out here. Like, yeah, you can, it's not like it can't be done. I'm just saying that it's no more an easy thing for you to do, because there's the entire NSAS organization didn't take place on traditional media.
It was social media.
It was a Twitter drive. And yeah. What was the reaction? We banned Twitter. Come and put an office here. We won't let you. It took the, but it's come to stay. We do understand it. Platforms come and it spread so many parts. So that energy is being put right. My fear and my challenge is that we need to harness it and point it in the right direction, like other countries have done. China has done that. Other spaces channel that youth energy into building. We need to start to look at that. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a top-to-bottom approach. I like the fact that Kenyans are asking for a bottoms-up approach, which is think about us first. You can't be buying cars and, you know, refurbishing presidential jets and you know, it's a ridiculous thing that, you know, I saw, like, there's a legislative instrument that is going into our parliament, and I just read over it. I haven't really gone into it, but it just says that to allow MPs and ministers to drive, use their sirens and drive faster in traffic, and the youth response is leave early, like we do.
Exactly.
If you want to get there, yeah. Leave early.
It's been a lot of imbalances, and you know, you're right. I worked for Voice of Kenya. It was the only TV channel in the country, and that time, if you were on TV, you were a bigger celebrity because the whole country didn't have any other choice. Second choice, no second TV channel to watch, or second TV or radio channel to watch. So you're right, again, the same. Yeah, it was easy because they had to speak to the nation. They had to come and control the only channel of communication. Yeah. And there you have it. It was so easy. But today is different. I worked with Komla Dumo at BBC World Service. I worked with him. He was a colleague. We worked together at BBC World Service. So I remember it was also very hilarious as well.
Hell yeah. That's another part that people didn't know. In private, his laugh per minute, as we used to call it, was like on. And when he turns that part off,
yeah,
different.
Yeah, but the Gen Z, like when you look at the issues, one of the things that is amazing is their ability to do practice a peaceful protest. It's never been seen ever before, and they are quick to remind you, you're the police officer. We are peaceful.
Colorful radio.
I'm saying that even by Kenyan standard, we have seen this is a different dispensation. This is a different movement. And I will never forget speaking to my niece not long ago, and just to find out what's going on. People our age, and she was telling me amazing stuff like, you know what, these days I read the constitution, I will observe all political debates because we have to be on the same page with everyone going to protest. And it's like, as young as I am, I'm quoting the constitution like a lawyer. Now, I imagine young people going to that level. And the other amazing TikTok conversations in Kenya have been all analysis of policies, analysis of rulership, analysis of where things are going wrong. You know, we are shocked because let me give you an experience of parents or the millennials. We used to think all the time, these young people, even when they're in university, they go to TikTok to get some entertainment and order Uber Eats or KFC. Little do we know, there was more to that than what we thought.
Yeah. They are organizing and learning things. And that's the thing. Like, I'm a father, and I was looking at my 8-year-old, and I was telling my wife, hey, this child is starting from the peak of where we are. They operate an iPhone. Like, how long did it take us before we even got our first phones? They are literally babies, can enter your password, go through, find the games. They've met AI now. Their voice activation is their thing. For us, we're still struggling to get used to it. We still do things, but they're starting from a certain space. So the world is a totally different play. And, you know, there's no more that part where your parents used to tell you that, you know, do as I say, not as I do. Now it's, you would do as you want me to do. So your people are being upheld to their own standards. Yeah, you're being pushed to their questions. The conversations I have with my 8-year-old is on a different level from where we have with my parents. And it's not oh, that's an ancestor talking to us. That's truly an ancestor, because the person that you're talking to actually knows a lot more than you do in a lot more navigation of today's world than you do. So it's not something that we can take for granted at any time at all. This is the time where we need to understand that we are all being pushed to a different realm, and whether we like it or yes, it's here. It's almost like what it is right now. Whether you like it or yes, the AI monster is out of the bag. It is here. It is how we decide to manage it. And it's the same thing. My kids will go on to do things I would think is science fiction. It is not. To them it's a regular thing. Okay, you struggle to get your first laptop. They're starting off with a laptop. They had a tablet at the start. So their navigation level and things. And again, that whole being plugged into a global system where they can learn from peers as fast as possible. So you're even, you know, you're lagging behind in how you're shaping them. And I guess this is what is happening even on the political side on the continent, that we're learning. Everybody was watching Kenya in real time. We watched Nigeria in real time. We watched Senegal in real time. We watched Ivory Coast in real time. Liberia in real time. Sierra Leone in real time. You're watching Burkina in real time. You're watching Mali in real time. You're watching Chad in real time. So there's no more lagging information. And also the dissemination is not limited by geographic area. We watched the South African elections in real time. And there are learnings that people have picked: organizational skills, how positioning, you know, how to structure your things. It builds on. It would cascade. And we're getting to that watershed again where it becomes that thing. It becomes, unfortunately, we can't hold it back. And that means that we need to start to turn the corner for ourselves. We need to start to pay attention to it. No more would you ride in big cars and have unemployment in your constituency. You're going to be asked about it. No more would you take it all and come back and hand over little pieces of muscle to the people and tell them that they should be glad it doesn't happen. So, because now they're waking up to understand that the resource is ours. We have the power.
Indeed. And the power to organize and unite and deliver has been the key. And I think most interesting. We have, of course, one of the things which touches on what we are talking about, creatives, is the idea that also along this bill, there are proposals to begin to tax, you know, YouTubers for monetizing their channels. And the one doing that is a government that didn't give them the job and didn't contribute for them to invest to begin to do their productions. So across Africa, I think that's something that resonates across. You don't tax, you know, work of creatives, and you never helped them to build it in the first place. Of course, they say there's a lot of money going around, is work like any other work, but actually that's not the way Gen Z saw it. Yeah, like, you don't do it. So
and it's so true. I think it's just sometimes governments appear predatory. They always turn up to the things that they do not necessarily contribute to, whereas they could have enacted policies to drive and spur these roads. We see that in the creative sector a lot. Like, you see private sector money driving things, and then the government steps in front to say, we want a piece of our share, which is fine. It's your land. But what is your what are you contributing to put on to make sure that you are taking? I mean, we've seen system, and let's go to culture. Every council and borough in Europe is investing in the culture space. There are festivals that they are partially funding. They are creating systems for you to be able to tap into. That's the support system. So when you come and the tax X is X, it's great. But how is it that I'm going to invest millions in getting the land ready, bringing infrastructure to the land, starting it, and then the first thing you do is you come in. Where is the creative accelerator that enabled that YouTuber to learn a skill, develop, access funds for initial, for their, like, capital for their initial? Where's that? There's always this thing I hear about in Africa, SME. We support SME. It's always just what it is. It's just talk. You want to see practical things that, hey, what if you are, we have a creative accelerator that you can come in. We've done a deal with a network provider that is going to zero rate your the data that you use. In fact, you can start off with 1,000 gig or something that you use, and this is our contribution to, as soon as you hit a monetization of this level, here's what you want to do. You're going to pay X tax. I'll tell you this, the average African is amenable and open to paying their fair share of the contribution if they can see that there is a commensurate work that has been put in, especially for young people. Like, that's why they question things. It's not that they don't want to pay taxes, and that's a demonization of Gen Z that needs to stop. It is just that we want to see your contribution to it. It is as simple as that, because you could have created that accelerator and put them in and created a factory floor, an assembly line that just pushes these people and say, hey, I need X amount of content available to these guys. And as soon as you hit this, because we have all of that, the details are already in, you hear the monetization, we're going to be charging X. I mean, who wouldn't want that? Knowing especially how tough startup cost is here. So when I've been able to take it to a certain level, it's very tough for me to think about that thing that you want to demand. But on the regular, I think people are amenable to pay. I used to work in financial services, and I said something I noticed about the African trader. Whether it doesn't matter, let me say the Ghanaian trader, right? They are more likely to pay you back if you gave them a loan structure that is not predatory and can accommodate their lifestyle. They would actually not want to, or they will pay back. You need to put the framework in place that brings it to them. But if you did a cycle that is just predatory and, you know, and it's easy to, they don't pay. No, it's not that. It's you that didn't want to weave it around.
Exactly.
Until very recently, we didn't have a national ID system. Now we do. Everybody's data is available. Let each department talk to each other to access this data to create the products that would allow for people to. How is it that networks across Africa, from M-Pesa to MTN Cash, MTN Momo to whatnot, are literally bigger than the banks in that country? Because they adapted to the lifestyle of their markets. They made it easy. Whereas banks were stuck in brick and mortar and didn't want to. I mean, hitherto, a few years ago, when I went to open a bank account, there was a minimum threshold I needed to put in. Then a bunch of Nigerian banks entered Ghana and smashed it open, right? Like zero rated account. You can just walk in and get an account. That shot up the number of people that wanted it, because the barrier of entry was removed. And go and look at the transactions over the years. They've made their money 10x without putting a barrier of entry there. And it's the same thing I'm saying. If data is available and young people want to TikTok and YouTube their way through, how can we organize them into a system that we can scale and then tax them? But if they have to claw their way through the murk and come back and build it, then obviously, there will be a resistance to. They'll ask you the question, why do you want my money?
Exactly. I overheard one of these Gen Z's and coming up with a brilliant suggestion. Telling, it was like a business idea for them, telling them to come together, 25 million of them, start up 25 million YouTube channels, get each of them watch, because anytime you watch the other channels, it's already have 25 million viewers.
Scale.
And monetize it. It's amazing.
In the technologies field, we've heard of things like you know, the bots and viewer farms in Korea. We don't know whether it's true or not. In viewer farms, in bot farms in China and co. It's the same scale. And we don't need that. We've got the bodies. We've got 1.3 billion people. And like you said, start 25 million channels.
Yeah.
There are 25 million people to watch everybody's channel. That's 25 million times 25 million. We will be taking Google's check.
Exactly. And they're saying now, they're telling the government, do us a favor. All we want is fund the data.
That's all. And the thing is this, that's
actually, sponsor the data.
That's the cheapest thing, zero rated. And you know the most amazing part? These services exist.
Yeah.
These frameworks exist. So all you needed was, hey, there's a channel. It is zero rated. If you watch, well, you get a little airtime for your system. All we want you to do is sit down and watch these channels.
Yeah.
25 million channels, 25 million views per channel. Google's check.
You monetize within a week.
That's it.
They think, you know, we think people don't... people underestimate these guys. They have brains. They are university graduates and they know what they are up to. So,
but I mean, this is a beautiful solution. This is exactly what we're talking about. That there's an African solution for an African problem. It is inelegant from a Western view, but it works.
It works, yeah.
It works, and it works. It works right.
Exactly.
We used to hear that global franchises don't want to come a supply chain in Africa. Yo, there are 30 something KFC joints in the last 6-7 years in Ghana alone, and there's jollof on the menu. It says they can't adapt to win.
Yeah, you have to adapt, reflect. You know what is on the target market. Wow, that has been amazing. Of course, you come again. I'll bring you again another time. We keep this conversation going.
I will be glad.
Yeah, but it's been pleasure having you.
Thank you, Julius.
This is Colorful Radio.
Can't believe every little thing I know. Can't believe every little thing gone up. Can't believe every little thing gone. Everything gone up. So me tell the farmer man them fi farm up. Who not chop the line? Well them gone bomb up. Prophecy fulfill and no me still a warn up. There's a fireman your heart. Will me just a warm on my food. On my food. On my food. Right now man on my food. On my food. On my food. Alright. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Anywhere, where me there, where you there, where you say, everywhere. Let me tell you one more thing I can deliver. Monday on the grind, but the price I get grimy. Over 3 months, landlord can't find me. One partner, Jack, can get a hand from tiny. School fee, I miss a mail of the fine. When you see that goose,